This is Into the Singleverse with Raj Verma. Unfiltered conversations about the latest trends and the tangible effects of real-time data on pivotal industries, our daily lives, and the future of our world.
My guest this week is Van Jones. In addition to his role as a CNN political correspondent, Van is a change maker and a thought leader working towards building a better society for everyone. He's the founder and CEO of Dream Machine, a nonprofit organization that is looking to change and create a harmonious society by tackling issues in technology, environment, and renewable energy, plus prison reform and other critical 21st century issues. Recently, I had the pleasure of meeting Van and rapper Will.i.am, who co-hosted Make Wakanda Real, a tech summit that shone a spotlight on how we can ensure that underrepresented and overlooked communities are at the forefront of the AI boom. Van, welcome to Into the Singleverse. It's great to see you again.
It's good to see you again, too. That was a great night, and we had a good time.
Yeah, no, it was truly a great night. So, Van, we started a conversation which I want to actually continue. I'm an immigrant to this great country, and I bring with it my own experiences, some good, some not that good. How was it growing up in America as a black man?
Well, you know, I was born in 1968, so that was the year they shot Dr. King, killed Bobby Kennedy, beat up a bunch of students at the Democratic Convention who were wanting peace in Vietnam. So the year I was born, they were trying to kill hope in America. But that wave of hope was hard to stop. And it infected my parents and infected me. And I grew up in an America that was trying to racially integrate, desegregate. I went to public schools in the rural South. In those days, black and white students, for that decade, black and white students were in the same buildings together. It was segregated before, and it's been resegregated since because there's been so much of an exodus to the private schools. But I had the benefit in the 70s and 80s of growing up side by side with white kids. We didn't have much money. They didn't have much money. But we got a chance to know each other. And that has affected me as a commentator on television. Having grown up in a red state on the edge of a small town, I understand the Trump voters. I understand as a young left-wing student at Yale, I understand the Bernie Sanders voters. I understand a lot of different kind of people. But I'm so glad I'm so glad I was born when I was born, where I was born. I think I've got a good sense about where people are coming from. I've faced my share of discrimination, but I also was given a lot of determination by my family as a ninth generation American. And when the doors opened for my generation, we ran through them and we're still running.
That's incredible. And the one thing that I came in about 20 years ago to this country, and my experience is actually been great. I live in the Silicon Valley, where innovation actually happens. Not all of it, but some pretty incredible companies are formed there. And I've just found America, and this is my perspective, that it does give a equal platform. At least it gave me an equal platform, right? Were all my experiences pleasant? Like someone says, right? You always energize certain experiences and then forget about the others. And it's typically the harsh ones that stay with you. And how you overcome those harsh experiences determines really how you turn out. I see you as someone I look up to, both because of your articulation, because of everything else that you do that you hear every day, but also because of your courage and tenacity to be able to speak your mind. Mm-hmm. And that is a platform that is uniquely American. Mm-hmm. So share with us, if you don't mind, some of the experiences that you had to sort of let go to be able to sit here in your coveted position as an opinion and a thought leader in America.
You know, I I had all the same experiences that you hear about, you know, as a young African American man. Look, I'm in my 50s now, so, and I'm on TV, so people are pretty nice to me wherever I go, and I have a different life than I had. But, you know, you're a young African American man, you walk into a store and people assume you're there to steal something. It's not a good feeling. I remember when I had my son, Cabral, who's now, you know, in his late teens, he's in college, when he was a little bit of baby, when I would walk into a store and I had him, suddenly everybody was nice to me. And I was like, oh, I guess they figure I'm not here to rob because I have a small baby with me. And so people could relax and talk to me and be nice to me. And I was like, it was proof to me that, hey, I'm seen as a threat just because of, you know, I'm 6 feet one, I'm African-American, I'm a man, and people, they've been trained to see me as maybe somebody who's going to do something negative. And so I'm kind of guilty until proven innocent. Those experiences scar you. They really scar you, and you become defensive. You become, you know, hypervigilant, and it gets in the way of being the creative, imaginative, free person you were when you were a little kid and didn't know about all this stuff and hadn't experienced all that stuff. So I've had to do a lot of work on myself to get back to just a reset moment in my own heart where I assume that whatever God placed in me that I think is good will eventually win out. I may have to work a little bit harder. I may have to reassure some people. I may have to get some other people who don't look like me to stand next to me to validate me. But I'm willing to do that extra work because I want to make a difference. I want to make a positive difference. When I grew up, you know, my heroes were Bobby Kennedy and Dr. King. Even though they had been killed the year I was born, they used their voices, they used their presence, they used their whole life to make America better, to help people who didn't have anything. And I don't want any of the scar tissue on my soul from, you know, mean people that said mean stuff a long time ago to get in the way of my contribution today and what I can do for tomorrow. But it was not easy. And everybody doesn't get there. You know, look, I've been rewarded because, you know, I had great parents. Even though I went to, you know, public schools in the South, we had great teachers. We didn't have many resources, but we had resourceful teachers. Didn't have that many resources, but we had resourceful teachers. And we and I was able to go to Yale Law School. I was able to teach at Princeton. I was able to be a fellow at MIT Media Lab. I've done all the great stuff, but I came from a very different place. And that tenacity you're talking about, it didn't come from me. It came from my parents, my grandparents, who went through so much worse than I did, and they didn't give up. They, you know, sharecropping and cleaning other people's houses and all those difficult things. My father, joining the military in the middle of Vietnam, just trying to get out of poverty, they had the tenacity, and they gave me the opportunity. And, you know, yes, I've had my bad days, but I've done my best to put them in perspective and keep pushing.
You've just been incredible. I remember, you know, I grew up going to a private school in India. We called them public school, top school in the city. Dad was in the army. We didn't have much, but we had access to a lot of resources. So I had a pretty decent life. And then I leave India and I come to America. And this is a true story that I haven't shared with too many people. I had an American boss who walks into my office and he sits down, puts his feet on my table and he hands me a can. And I'm like, what the hell is that? He says, look, man, I don't know you, but you fucking Indians stink. So here is a can of deodorant. Make sure you use it before you come to work. This is 25 years ago. And, you know, I actually initially thought it was a joke or a prank. And then I realized he actually wasn't joking. He was mega serious.
Wow.
And you know, it's so funny. I had that moment to react as to how I would react to this. And I still actually have that deodorant can in my bathroom that I will never throw away because it just shows how lack of information, education, and exposure makes people feel so absolutely belittled by people who are in positions of authority and power. And As life has been much like yourself, and I still have my journey to take, as life has gotten a little, how do I put it, as I can probably influence more lives, that can of deodorant is something that I look at practically a few times a week to ensure that I'm never as rude or almost borderline cruel to people that don't look like me, feel like me, talk like me, or behave like me. And I just share this story just to, in the sake of reciprocity.
I appreciate you saying that. And first of all, that's horrible, and that is cruel. And I think that what I would say to somebody listening to that story and to you is, you know, in my faith, we would say, you know, God meant that for good. Breakdowns can become breakthroughs if we use them right. You will never be cruel in your life ever again because someone was cruel to you and they meant to try to break you down. They actually built you up. Now you're in a position of leadership and authority. You're going to be so much kinder. You turn that bad into good. You turn that evil into good. And I think that's what I want to say to anybody who's suffering from discrimination or feels that they've had somebody handed them a bad deck, a mean can of deodorant, a dirty look, an insult, a slur. Don't do those people the favor of letting that then let you become bitter and stop you from doing what you're supposed to do. The most important thing we can do is just what you did. Take that can of deodorant, put it on the mantle, and every day when you walk out of your home, say, I'm going to do good for people. That's the only thing we can do is to turn all this pain into promise for other people. And I'm glad you told that story. It's a terrible story, but you've done great with it.
Yeah, but you're right. I think it motivates me. It just basically propelled me. And you articulated so beautifully that, you know, it rather than breaking me down, gave me a breakthrough, which I think has made me a better human. The one thing I'd love to understand from you or take your views on this is, you know, I've lived in 6 different countries and before I got here, and no country has more of a innovation platform or innovation culture than America. It has all its problems and it has all its challenges. It truly is, to me, one of the greatest countries in the world, if not the greatest country in the world. And especially when you take the platform that it offers for innovation, especially here in the Valley, it's just incredible. Incredible. It doesn't matter what you say, what you wear, how you look. As long as you have a smart idea, it is appreciated. And I have a narrow view since I live in the Valley. What do you think spurs that culture of innovation where the Valley and America has led the world in innovation for the last, I don't know, 100 years or so? Where is that basis of that, in your opinion?
We get to cheat. We get to steal all the best talent from around the world. When you go look at the Olympics, the Chinese team comes out. Everybody there is from China. The Kenyan team comes out. Everybody there is from Kenya. The Italian team comes out. Everybody there almost is from Italy. When the U.S. team comes out, we got every color in the rainbow. Every color in the Skittles bag. We look like the Muppet Show because we got all the talent from everywhere. So it's hard to lose when you get to steal all the best talent. Now, the problem is you have people now want to close off America and say, we don't want any of these geniuses to come here. We don't want any of these hungry, hardworking people to come here. We want to keep them all out. And now I got to be stuck trying to win against the world with people I went to high school with. I'm going to tell you right now. People I went to high school with are not going to beat the world. So I want people from around the world to come here. And, okay? This is reality. I want people to come from around the world and keep us going. I don't understand why people are anti-immigrant when it's the immigrant population that's coming in here, refreshing over and over and over again that hunger, that drive, that determination, that innovation. People are so happy to get away from wherever they came from, where everything was, you know, locked down and bureaucratic and, you know, where you were born and who you could bribe and was more important than what was in your heart and in your head. Now, I think you might overstate the case a little bit to the extent that, you know, there are barriers that are not fair, even in Silicon Valley. You know, if you're a female, if you're a person of color, these challenges are still there. But the opportunity is unmatched. Even with those barriers, even with those scars and scratches, the opportunity is unmatched. And I think too many people in America forget that. Number one, on the right wing, my conservative friends, please remember, we're stealing the best talent. Don't think you're that damn good. You're not that good, and I'm not that good. We're stealing the best talent. And people on the left wing, please don't forget, as for all our flaws and scars, I'm trying to find a better country. I think of one. I can't think of a perfect country. I'm trying to think of one where if you can deal with some of the disappointments of the biases that exist, if you can figure out a way to internalize that in a way that empowers you and doesn't disempower you, the upside opportunity in the United States is unmatched. And so I think both wings of our political discourse are missing the point. What we have here, what we've been able to do here in the United States. You think about liberty and justice for all, just as a concept. The right wing likes liberty, individual rights, limited government. The left wing likes justice, you know, up with the poor and the oppressed or whatever. You put those two things together in the right balance, you get liberty, the best of capitalism, and justice, the best of idealism. You put those together, you have a great country, and I don't see another one like it.
Absolutely. The two sort of questions that I have, just because I think you are the right person for me to be educated on. I hear from the right-wing media that one of the biggest reason why they get support for their anti-immigration policy is because immigrants come in and heighten up crime, right? And you have been involved in, you know, prison reforms, etc. What's your answer to a right-wing statement which says that we are for stopping immigration because they escalate crime and we feel unsafe around them?
Look, it's just not true. I mean, on a per capita basis, our immigrant communities are the least prone to crime. Now, you might say, well, you know, if they come here without paperwork, they're committing a crime every day. But the kind of crime we're talking about, violent crime, drug crime, on a per capita basis, they're the least likely to commit crime. Some of the populations that the right wing targets, like, say, the Muslim population, they have the lowest crime rate, the Muslims. They have the highest educational attainment for women. They have the highest business formation rate of any, right? The Muslims are basically the model American community. If a Muslim family moved in next door to you, you would say hallelujah, because the chances of your kids getting in trouble just went way down. Those kids are going to be studying and doing the right stuff. So, and then when they talk about, you know, Mexican, American kids and folks from south of the border, some of those people are coming here doing bad stuff. But they're not doing bad stuff by themselves. They're doing bad stuff bringing drugs, supplying drugs, for which there's a massive demand here because of problems on this side of the border where there's a big demand for drugs. But it's a mistake to even focus on that because the vast majority of people who are coming here for work. They're picking the fruit that and the vegetables you ate today. They're working in the service sector. They're working in the construction sector. I tell people all the time, do you have a house? Yes. Does it ever rain? Yes. Have you ever had a leak in your roof? Yes. Well, who do you think is fixing the roofs? I'm here in California. Every roofer was not born here in the United States. the person who's watching your grandmother right now at the nursing home probably was not born in the United States. The person who's watching your kid right now at daycare probably wasn't born in the United States. So you can say, yeah, I'm pro-immigration. No, I'm pro grandmas and babies and roofs getting the help they need. And that all comes from people not born in the United States. So some of this stuff is just foolishness. Yes, there are some bad people in the immigrant community. There are bad people in the non-immigrant community as well. There's bad people in every community. But you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Why don't we expel everybody who's a domestic person in the United States because some of us commit crimes? Would that make sense? Would you want to push every law-abiding American citizen off in the ocean because some of us commit crimes? No. Well, then why are you going to tar and feather the whole immigrant population because some of them commit crimes? This has become kind of a tribal dividing line inside the United States, which doesn't have anything to do with being fair. We need immigrants. The innovation comes from there. The energy comes from there. The passion comes from there. And do you really want to leave all these good people in other countries to compete against us? Y'all, you're dumb. I don't want, if you're not happy in your country, come here and make us better. if you can't start your business over there, please come over here and start it here. You know, that's what's keeping us competitive. It's not the people I went to high school with, I tell you that.
I love that. I'm a father of four, and the sort of the all-Americans, and they grew up feeling American. They are American. They are kind, giving, naturally well-educated, and they have an optimism for the future that the use of technology will make the world a better place, all right? Two of my older kids are pursuing data science in Cal Berkeley, and the two others, one in high school, one is too young. And they are extremely optimistic about how they will partake in the use of technology to make the world a better place, the society a better place, and serve the underprivileged, the vulnerable in society. And I know you're a big proponent of how AI and the upcoming technologies would level the playing field for the underprivileged, the underserved, the downtrodden in society. Please share your views on how you think that's going to happen.
Well, it may happen, it may not. It's up to us. You know, it reminds me of a story they used to tell us in church, where a little kid has a little baby bird in his hands, and he goes up to the wise man. And he says to the wise man, is this bird alive or is this bird dead in my hand? And the wise man knew, well, if he said the bird was dead, he would open his hand and let the bird out. If he said the bird was alive, he'd crush the bird and then show it was a dead bird. So it was a trick question. Is this bird alive or dead? So what the wise man says is, well, I don't know for sure the answer, but I can tell you this. It's in your hands. It's in your hands. So it's in our hands. We could have a great future.
Very well said.
We could have a great future. We could have a future we can't even imagine, or it could be a disaster. It's in our hands. And I think it's important that those of us who, frankly, want to see disruption, need to see disruption. If you care about poor communities, the school system needs to be disrupted. The way we educate poor kids, the healthcare system, needs to be disrupted. The community safety, level of community safety, that needs to be disrupted. But those communities by themselves don't have the power to disrupt those systems that are not serving them. At the same time, the technologists, they have the power to disrupt everything. You look at AI, you look at biotech, you look at quantum computing, you look at all of the technologies that are just exploding right now, they have the potential to disrupt everything. But for what purpose? Just greed and speed? You just want money? You just want to be first? You want to outcompete your competitors? Well, you got a lot of power. You don't have much purpose. At the same time, you got communities that have a lot of purpose. They need disruption, but they don't have a lot of power. But if you bring those two communities together, if you bring the technologists who have the power to really rethink and disrupt and redesign everything, but they don't necessarily have a strong purpose, with the people who lack that power but have that purpose, now you've got something special. Now you can start using this technology to uplift communities. You start using this power to really tap into the great potential of every child on earth. You've got the ability to deal with climate change. You've got the ability to deal with chronic diseases. You've got the ability to deal with nutrition. You've got the ability to do so much with technology if it is allied to the people who need a different, newer, and better system. If it's just allied to the people who have money for big contracts and who are trying to figure out only how to be commercially successful, but they don't care if they're doing well while they're doing good, if they're doing good while they're doing well, then you might have a disaster. But I have a great deal of confidence in this young generation because they're so aware. Like, they do know about the problems of the world. They do want to live meaningful lives. they want to do well and make money, but they also want to do good. And that's really the hope in the future. So when we say make Wakanda real for all you Marvel fans, you might have seen my Spider-Man up there. for all you Marvel fans, you may remember Wakanda is the country from which the Black Panther comes, and it's a technological superpower. But it's African people with, you know, they're all their traditions and all their beauty and all their culture, but they also have technology. Well, that is what we should be trying to create around the world. Indigenous people, Black and brown people, poor people. Let's make Wakanda real. Let's put technology in the hands of communities that have been left out, overlooked, underestimated. Help them bloom first. I guarantee you, whatever you do with technology, if you have a little bit of an orientation for the people who are usually overlooked, your technology is going to be better. Your market's going to be bigger. Your feeling's going to be prouder. Your brand is going to be stronger. It's a lot better to use technology in service of the best in people. And that's what our whole Make Wakanda Real campaign is all about out of dreammachine.org.
Yeah, and it was great playing a very, very small part in that. I enjoyed that evening. And in our interaction there, I think, I'm sure I'm going to get this wrong, but I think you have the belief that if you could join the four pillars of federal government, education, and I forget, I think political will and Hollywood, which, you know, provides the culture, you can actually do a lot of good. I'm sure I got one of those four pillars wrong. That made a lot of sense. And I do think that generative AI, for one, does have the ability to connect those powerhouses. And if we have the will to point it in the right direction with the right purpose, I do think that we could do good. But I naturally butchered it, but I'll give you an opportunity to really share how you think of that future.
Well, right now, when we talk about those four pillars of power, you're right, it's the federal government, the power of democracy, the power of government, but that's only one power. You mentioned Hollywood, media, the power of storytelling. The other two are what I call Wall Street finance. You know, that's a big source of power in New York City. And then in Northern California, where you are, technology. It's actually a map of the country. You know, you look at the Bay Area, that's where the technology power is. You look at New York City, that's where finance is. You look at Washington, D.C., that's where government power is. You look here in L.A., that's where media, storytelling. If those four could be brought together, those big powerhouse centers brought together for good, there's nothing you can't get done. And it's, you know, listen, all those are complicated power centers and have their internal dynamics and what, but just from a conceptual point of view, remember, we have all the power that we need. We've got the tools that we need, the technology that we need. We have an open system for innovation. We have an open system for political change. We're set up to do great here. And we have this incredibly diverse young generation that's bringing so many different points of view to the table, so many different ideas to the table. I just want to make sure that we keep that optimism, keep our spirits up. It's so easy. Social media, you know, you'll drive you crazy. You'll be depressed and distressed or distracted or divided. We should be using these things as tools and not toys for distraction, tools to bring us together and solve these problems. And I think the young generation has a real opportunity. I think people in our generations have to hold the door open for them and help them and support them. But I think they have a real opportunity. We know change is coming. We know change is coming. Nothing is going to be the same 20 years from now, 10 years from now. Look, 25 years from now, I didn't even have a pager, let alone a smartphone. I mean, 25 years ago, I didn't even have a beeper. we had fax machines. 25 years later, I mean, you can learn anything you want to just sitting, you know, on the beach with your phone. So where are we going to be in 20 years, in 25 years? We can't even imagine it. Let's make sure we're bending it toward good. Let's make sure we're bending. I can't make change anymore. In the last century, as a good lawyer, a good activist, I could make change. You're going to make the change. Technology is going to make the change. By the time a Senate subcommittee finishes introducing all the senators, you've updated my phone five times out of Silicon Valley. So the change is coming from technology. So the question isn't how do I make change? The question is, how do I make the change that's coming help more people? How do I make the change that technology is going to drive help more people? That's this century's question. Not how do I in government, I as an activist, I as a protester, I as a lawyer, how do I make change? That's the last century. The new century is, how do I make the change that technology is going to bring help more people? And that's what Make Wakanda Real is all about, recognizing the power of technology. Government has a role to play, but it's going to play a much smaller role overall, just because you guys are going so daggum fast that government's not going to be able to keep up anyway. So let's make sure you're going fast in the right direction.
You know, in this time next year, we would know who the next president of our great nation is. There's a lot of trepidation around that. And on both sides, right?
Sure.
And we think those two sort of options are pretty dramatic in terms of the outcomes. And what's your prediction, and how do you think it affects specifically what you just said? You know, we will have a lot of power through technology, and channeling it for good is going to be more important than ever, ever, ever before. What do you think is, if you had a crystal ball this time next year, Raj and Van are having a chat, what do we see the world looking like?
We got some challenges now because there's something called World War III, whatever that looks like. We will say it started these past couple of years, because what it looks like is lining up is the democracies, the United States, European Union, Israel, on one side of a kind of a divide. And then on the other side, it's starting to look like China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. And you're starting to see proxy battles break out between those two camps. Ukraine is something of a proxy battle. Hamas and, you know, the fight, you know, that's going on over there, something of a proxy battle, because Hamas is supported by Iran, Ukraine supported by the United States. You're starting to see proxy battles break out along these different lines and divisions. But we have imperfect democracies going up against pretty, from my point of view, scary autocracies. That seems to be the clash. The problem that you have is, if you dip into a more authoritarian direction in the United States, if you don't support Ukraine in the United States, if you don't stick up for civil liberties and civil rights for everybody in the United States, you advantage on the world stage the autocrats, the authoritarians. I think that's a bad outcome, because you really want actually more democracy, more openness, more innovation, more freedom, mainly so you get enough energy to solve all these problems when it comes to, you know, poverty and pollution and everything else. So I worry that this bright future I see as possible through technology does require some stability on the world stage, and does require the continued expansion of democracy and open societies, and not the collapse thereof. It's a long way of saying, I worry about the election that's coming up. Look, I worked for Joe Biden when I was in the Obama administration. I worked with Donald Trump on criminal justice, black colleges, and opportunity zones. And I worked for Barack Obama, and I was successful in getting George W. Bush to sign my Green Jobs Act. And I even was successful working with Bill Clinton as a young guy. So I've worked with Republicans and Democrats. Everybody knows I'm as bipartisan as a left-wing Democrat can be. So it's not that I'm hyper-partisan. Sometimes you need to change a party, but you don't want a change of direction away from democracy. You don't want a change of direction away from open society. You don't want a change of direction on the global stage that leaves democracy at risk in Europe or in the Middle East. So this is a great challenge. And I don't make any predictions at all. I'm not optimistic. I'm not pessimistic. I'm determined. I'm not optimistic. I'm not pessimistic. I'm just determined that we have the future that your kids deserve and my kids deserve. Some of that's about politics, some of that's about economics, some of it's about technology, some of it's about innovation. Some of it's about just telling the right story. I'm a storyteller. The right story, if I could write it myself, would be next year we get close to the edge of looking at what it would mean to have radically less democracy, radically less rule of law, radically more susceptibility to corruption in the United States. And we pull back from that, whether it's the Republicans that pull us back or Democrats that pull us back, that we pull back from that and we recommit as a country, both parties and people outside of the parties, that at least in the United States, rule of law matters, democracy matters, open society matters, tolerance matters, inclusion matters, innovation matters, and that we recommit to that, because if we don't do it here, I worry about the rest of the world.
Van, my friend, this has been an energizing conversation. Very, very, very well said. I hope you make your flight on time. It's an absolute pleasure to be with you this afternoon. And also look forward to supporting some of your initiatives that you lead. It'll be a privilege and an honor to do so. And stay well and be well.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to subscribe to automatically receive future episodes. Additionally, I would greatly appreciate it if you can take a moment to leave a review, helping others like you discover the show. I'll see you next time. Stay well and be good.
This was Into the Singleverse with Raj Verma. To learn more about Raj, please go to rajverma.com. This is a Single Store podcast production.